Journalist and cultural critic Kate Bollock is back with another season of Touchstones Conversations at the Mount in Lenox, Massachusetts. On Thursday afternoon, Kate will be having a conversation with author Lee Siegel about his memoir, The Draw. The book tells the story of the unforgiving sovereignty of money. Hoping to make a killing in New Jersey real estate, Lee's dad, Monroe Siegel, takes a draw from his employer against unearned commission. When the recession hits in the 1970s, Monroe finds himself owing a small fortune to his firm. He sinks toward divorce and bankruptcy, while Wola, Lee's mother, suffers a nervous breakdown, and that turns her into a different person. Shamed and enraged by his father's fate, Lee grows up wondering what society owes a person who has failed materially but preserved his humanity. Again, the new memoir is The Draw. He'll be at the Mount on Thursday afternoon at 5 o'clock, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Lee Siegel to the roundtable this morning. Lee, thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be here.
Very nice to have you on the program. What brought you to the point of wanting to share this story with an audience?
Well, I just felt that it was time to tell this story. I've been writing versions of it for years. You know, it always made its way into my writing. I'm very sensitive to issues of class and issues of money. Certainly, looking out at the country and seeing the divisions in the country, the inequality, the kind of a growing oligarchy, a growing caste of people who have access to everything, and more people who don't. That made me also very sensitive to the circumstances that I was raised in.
So talk about how you look at this, because the book is fascinating. What is it that you wanted to explore in the sense of, for yourself in writing it, of what you really wanted to tackle?
I wanted to get at this paradox at the heart of, I think, especially American life, where success is defined solely in terms of material means, of money. And the paradox being that what if you're a witty, a kind, a considerate, creative, gifted person, but you're kind of hapless in the world? You don't know how to make money or a lot of money. You stumble, you lose money. Why should you be punished materially for that if you have these other wonderful human qualities that society claims to value so much? That's what I wanted to get at.
It's also, I mean, this is very much about the power of money, isn't it? I mean, in this sense, this story and all of the trouble seem to stem from just that.
Yeah, well, I think in our culture now, in society now especially, money is literally has become the bottom line. Money is everything. I call it the moniverse. Even money has become monetized, right? You know, we use our cards to get points, and even our money's working for us all the time, and everything's reduced to money. And I think, you know, I wrote an op-ed about this a couple of years in the New York Times, talking about how when I was in my 20s, I was under a crushing load of student debt. You know, in those days, there was no income-based repayment. I had a 9% interest, and I either had to pay $600 a month or not, and I couldn't live a life. I couldn't meet a woman and make a family and pursue a career, and so I decided to walk away from it, from my debt at that time. Caused a huge uproar, and that kind of informs the book too. In the book, I end up taking out loans, kind of unwittingly repeating my father's fate, and the question I ask is the question that I asked in that op-ed: why should the accident of birth determine whether you have access to quality higher education? Why is that? It's not the case in many other countries.
It is interesting that particular op-ed had an effect on you, in the sense of, because it seemed, and I advising people to default on their student loans rather than remain in debt. At the time, as you say, it was very controversial. You accused what you referred to as an elite media of disregarding the plight of the middle class and poor. Do you still think that that's the case?
I think unfortunately, I think the media is run by, and some of them are my friends, people who grew up in very affluent, sometimes wealthy circumstances, and they pay a lot of lip service to, for example, the black poor, but they don't care about them, and they certainly don't care about people in their own realm, the middle class, who, you know, whom they have to compete with and whom their children have to compete with. And I think if you're white and you're in the middle class or the lower middle class, and you want to talk about economics, that they don't like that. It's too close to home. You know, the heroes of my book are often the black people I met when I was younger and whom I worked alongside. And I guess there's something controversial about that because I try to get into the heads of all the people in my book, and including the black people I've known in my life. And these people were the most sympathetic to me. And in fact, it was black people who were most sympathetic to my op-ed. I think that the kind of liberal white elites, for all their rhetoric, they don't really get what it is to struggle materially in this country. There are other people who do, and I feel closer to them.
How did your father's journey inform those opinions, and seeing what he had gone through and mirroring some of it in your own life?
Well, I certainly became resolved not to end up like my father. My father abandoned piano because he wanted to make a fortune in New Jersey real estate. And that was a big mistake. He didn't follow what his destiny was, not to sound mawkish, but he was a good piano player, and that's what he should have done. And I clung to my writing, and I would not give that up, no matter what. Once my father started taking the draw, he had to keep taking it. He had to support his family. But I decided that my nature was not of a practical, transactional kind, as my father's wasn't, and I decided to stick to my guns and try to make a life for myself as a writer. But as I said, unwittingly, I had to take out a lot of loans to stay in school, and I in some respects, repeated my father's fate, at least in the sense of becoming indebted.
When you look at the situation and the effect that it has on your life and your father's personal life, the marriage, your mother, it is all quite devastating. I mean, this is going back to an earlier point, but that old phrase of, you know, money is the root of all evil. As far as the evils in your life, it certainly seems that that is the case.
Yes, well, as I say in the book, I think my father would have struggled in any society, in any universe. The question is, would he have suffered materially? Would money have been the means by which all these terrible consequences produced their effect? He was a very vulnerable guy. He wasn't that canny about other people and about social situations. But would he have suffered materially in another society for those reasons? I don't think so. I think in a different society, he would have had other problems. He probably would have been divorced by my mother anyway. But he wouldn't have ended up as he did. And I don't say this in the memoir because it ends when I'm 23. But much later, he dies alone in a rented room. Would that have happened on welfare? Would that have happened in another society? I don't think so.
You certainly don't hold back in talking about the emotional scars left by all of this, and it is very introspective. I'm interested as to whether the book helped you put that into some perspective, or in writing it that helped you put it into some perspective, or was it that you had already figured it out, allowing you to write the book?
It was more the latter case, but you know, people often talk about writing a memoir as being therapeutic. It was the opposite for me. I opened old wounds that I had been aware of and analyzed and to the extent that I could. And learn to live with, but I opened them up again, and it was transporting and joyous reliving my life. You know, even bad things that happen to you, because they happen to you and they're in the past, they're part of your life, and even reliving them sometimes can be very fulfilling. But it also sent me hurtling back into those moments of my life. And there were moments when it was very painful. So I wouldn't say it was cathartic in any way. I'm on the contrary.
But you're glad you did it.
I'm glad I did it. I'm very proud of it. It's something that in later years, when my children are older, I hope they'll read it and it will allow them to understand me better. I'm more proud of this than anything I've written.
Lee Siegel will be at the Mount in Lenox with a conversation with Kate Bollack on Thursday afternoon at 5 p.m. EdithWharton.org for more information. The new memoir is The Draw, published by FSG. Lee, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me on.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.